Is he my prince? Is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt. Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Hey, welcome to the Shame-Free Zone. I'm your host, Veronica Monet. With me this evening is the beautiful and intelligent Dr. Sherry Myers. She's got a brand new book out called Chatting or Cheating. And I can't wait to hear how she distinguishes those two. Frankly, I work with a lot of clients who have trouble telling where is that line between the texting and online chat rooms and emails and just flirting at the office. It can get a little bit confusing sometimes. Dr. Myers, welcome to the Shame-Free Zone.
Oh, it's wonderful to be here. Thanks, Veronica.
Glad to have you here. And you've actually written quite a few books. You've also got a website called StraightFromTheHeart.com. And if people want to check out your book, that's at chattingorcheating.com, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay,
and there's free videos on the website and lots of information. So if they feel inspired, and there's even a free chapter to my book all about emotional sex. So they'll be able to tell if they're chatting or cheating after reading that free chapter.
Okay, good. Hopefully they'll have some idea after tonight's program. So, you know, you say that friendships are great and emotional affairs are trouble. How would anybody know which is which?
Well, it's pretty easy to tell because when we're friends with somebody, we love talking with them. We love sharing what's going on in our life. But we're not fantasizing about it. I don't know about you, but there's not a friend that I have that I fantasize about. I don't make love to my partner and think about that person. My hours and my days aren't checking to see if they wrote to me. I'm not planning ahead in the future to think about, oh, well, maybe they'll like this joke, and how can I please them, and how can I connect with them? Because what begins to happen when we're starting to cross the line from chatting into what I call the emotional sex zone is certain brain chemistry starts kicking in and taking over. And it starts fooling us into thinking and feeling like we're in love. And what begins to happen is we start having a crush on this person, whether we own it or not. But if we take a step back and we look at our behavior, it's pretty easy to see that we're crossing that line.
Well, okay, maybe easy for you, because a lot of people who find it confusing. What about denial? I mean, wouldn't a lot of people feel like, hey, it's just a friendship, what are you getting so upset about?
Well, that's usually the denial excuse. You're absolutely right, especially when confronted by a partner. It's like, hey, we're just texting. Lighten up. Why are you so paranoid? Or, you know, what's the big deal? What is she even talking about? Well, hey, it's just a Facebook friend. What, you know, so what? A billion people are doing this. It's no big deal. But if it's starting to drain your attention, if your attention's going more out, because I got to tell you, I'm addicted to the internet, and I'm aware. And so many people are spending more and more and more time on the internet away from their relationship or maybe to escape their relationship than they are putting energy into the relationship.
You know, it was kind of shocking to me. A recent study came out asserting that if you have all those friends on Facebook, it's it has the same beneficial impact on your physiology as real friends.
Really?
Yes.
I can see that. It's kind of Matrix-like. It sort of scares me because you can get as much thrill and satisfaction and be communicating, and it's 24/7. You can connect with anybody. You don't even have to wait. You don't have to wait till they wake up. You don't have to wait to call. You can just go online, and you have hundreds or thousands of friends there. So there's always usually someone or a number of people accessible. And if they're not, you can read posts and get into other people's lives and feel a connection anytime, any day.
It's true. And I think because it's one, I don't know, what you call it, one-dimensional or two-dimensional, but it seems that it certainly streamlines the whole relationship. So if you're having issues and problems at home and you don't know how to deal with those, you get this quick fix when you go on Facebook or tweet somebody or text somebody because they immediately, give you kind of that feeling of being loved and accepted. How do we even get people's interest in working on a relationship? Because wouldn't you agree that relationships tend to be work?
Well, relationships feel like work, especially when they start getting drained of energy, because truthfully, most of us are so darn busy anyway, and there's not a lot of satisfaction. We're kind of doing our lives. We're trying just to keep up, whether it be with the rent or all the activities, or if we have kids, we're running around with them and trying to be good parents and good friends and good whatever we are, good workers and co-workers. And then I gotta tell you, Facebook and tweeting, that's a whole drain on us, on our time as well. So there's not a lot of time for our primary relationship. And if we're not communicating and if we're not feeding it with what I call the three A's, attention, appreciation, and affection, it's going to feel more and more like there's a hole, an emotional distance between us. And then it feels like harder and harder to fix. So what happens is we start putting our attention in where we do get pleasure, such as Facebook or tweeting or looking at porn or whatever that is, talking on chat rooms or meeting new friends or having hobbies. But we take our attention away from our relationships, from our primary relationships, and get our needs met elsewhere. And our relationships really suffer. So, yes, then they become a lot of work.
Yes, right. It's kind of like tending to the garden on a regular basis or waiting a year.
Right, exactly. That's a good analogy.
I just bought a new home that needs some help in the garden. Can you tell?
So it is. It's like watering because your relationship's like a rose.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be so beautiful and so satisfying, but you do have to water it, and it needs some sunshine, and a little love certainly couldn't hurt. If you ignore it for a year, it will die. The whole rose bush will die.
Mm. I think this is an intriguing concept for a lot of people, claim that you can tell them how to tell if their partner is cheating?
Absolutely.
Well, do tell. Everybody's waiting with bated breath here.
Okay. Well, for one thing, truthfully, you get a gut feeling. You can feel something's different. You can most likely, trust me, they're not cheating if you guys are really together. So there's probably some emotional distance already, but there's some things to check out. Like when they leave the house and come home from the end of the day, do they smell or taste different? So, for example, if they leave the house smelling like Safeguard and come back smelling like Dove, and they haven't been to the gym, and I don't think even at the gym they'd be smelling like Dove. That's one of the red flags. Also, when you walk into the room, if they're on the computer, suddenly do they change their behavior? Are they really engrossed, but all of a sudden they're closing their laptop? Are they spending more and more time texting? Are they up in the middle of the night, suddenly in the bathroom, making calls or seeming to text? How much attention and availability is there really to give you? How, in terms of their clothing, has it changed? Has their style changed? If they've never cared about their appearance and suddenly they're getting haircuts, and it, you know, I'm not sure if your audience is men or women, but you know, suddenly the clothing is changing and the interest in what they're wearing, and it's not seeming for you, it's for when they're leaving the house. Those are all red flags. It
right.
may be time to be a fair aware.
Yes. Very, very possibly. Do you think some spouses are frustrated in the relationship and actually want to get caught?
Well, a lot of times, if you are having an affair, I always wonder, is it in an exit affair? Because if you, a lot of times clients will come to me and say, you know, is it better to confess? And I usually wonder, you know, because, yes, if you want your relationship to work, it is so much better to confess than be confronted. Most men will disagree with me. I have so many, like, arguments with, for example, male coaches who believe, no, you never tell. But if there's going to be honesty and if there is really going to be a relationship, it has to be built on openness and communication and, in a way, becoming naked with each other. So if you're holding on to a lie, the chances of that authenticity happening are really slim. And what happens is that secret that you carry starts becoming a burden, especially when you decide, okay, I really want to come home and I want to make my relationship work and I don't want to destroy it. But some people have affairs to use as an exit strategy. They may even leave kind of clues around so that their partner will bust them and kick them out. And then they don't feel like they have had to come forth and say, I want to end the affair. They're willing to leave as the bad guy or bad girl, whatever the case may be.
Right.
But so they can use it as an exit strategy, or they're hoping they'll get caught because they're in an affair, especially this happens with physical affairs, where the mistress or lover is starting to demand more and they don't know how to get out of it. So they're hoping that their partner will catch them so that they must exit. So they have a reason to cut it off with their lover because they've been busted and they have no choice now.
Right, so, and they don't have to muster the
courage
to come up there and, you know, say, I want out themselves.
Right. In either situation. Because really, affairs are not courageous. They're about secretiveness. They're about betrayal. And they're about going against a promise that you made. So if there is a promise of monogamy and a promise of integrity, and you're cheating the one you made a promise not to. And so you're starting to live a lie. And that's the worst part of affairs. You know, maybe if the relationship's not working, but you want to be together or you want to have an open relationship, that's fine, but then renegotiate it. It's the secretiveness and the lying and the sneaking about that really creates the most destruction to a relationship.
And not only destructive to the relationship, but destructive to the people that are doing the lying. I think this oftentimes kind of have this attitude like, well, I got by with it, or I pulled one over on them, and it kind of makes them feel powerful and in control.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that people are intuitively in touch with how lying to somebody that you love and that you're very close to actually destroys you
yes.
and deteriorates your self-esteem and your sense of self.
Well, because you're a liar. And you may take pride in that, but I think you're absolutely right, Veronica, because ultimately it is you that you live with and your body that you have to live with. And unless you're really, I hate to say it, but unless you're sociopathic, lying builds up and the deception builds up. And ultimately, it just feels awful in your body. It doesn't feel good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's toxic, actually.
Mm-hmm. But what you mentioned earlier, I think, is more true. A lot of people don't believe they're cheating. They think, I'm just chatting. What's the big deal? These, you know, they're so uptight in this conversation. Like, it's really, what are they, from the dinosaur ages? This is what everybody's doing. And
right.
The reason I wrote Chatting or Cheating was really to be kind of the Paul Revere of the modern era, to ride through the streets, the cyber streets, and go, beware, beware, you know, be a fair aware, because it seems so innocent, but it can take relationships down. The divorce rate is already so high. There's so much separation going on that attention, conscious attention, really has to go to building the relationship and making it strong, because very few of us in our generation are trained for long-term relationships. I know I'm a product of divorce. I know my kids are a product of divorce. And there's a really bad lineage that we are carrying down about loyalty and longevity in relationships. And I think the internet and I think what's going on is creating more and more destruction to relationships, and it takes utter consciousness to bring attention back. But that attention doesn't have to take a lot of work. It sounds like it's a lot of work, but it could be really fun. Because, can we talk for a moment about the three A's?
No, please.
Okay. So, the three A's, attention, appreciation, and affection. So what is attention?
Okay.
Attention is when your partner comes home running up and giving each other a 20-second kiss. 20 seconds, one thing, 20-second kiss is really hot. But 20 seconds isn't that much time. And if for some reason you can't do that or they can't do that, at least greeting your partner and welcoming them home. And when the partner leaves, when one of you leaves, whoever leaves first, it's really saying goodbye in a lovely way. It's making eye contact. It's talking to each other. It's making sure that you even have 10 minutes a day to do a check-in with each other and sit down and share your world so that you don't need Facebook to share your world. That you can use Facebook, but also bring your partner in. Bring your partner into your world so that you're not living totally separate lives. And when you come together, it's not about just talking about the kids or talking about work. It's talking about you, where you're at, finding out where they're at, where the person really is at, making that connection and giving each other quality time and attention. Just even a little bit makes so much difference. So that's 1A. Now, does that sound like a lot of work?
I don't think so. I think that's the whole reason to be in a relationship. I mean, if you're not talking to each other, then why are you even in a relationship?
Right, right. And then the second one is appreciation. You know, it's, we tend to focus on what's wrong and not what's on what's right. So it's about even looking at five things each day you're grateful for and saying them out loud and thanking your partner for the small things they do. Because when you recognize the good things and you start expressing gratitude, what's going to happen is you're going to feel more love. Your heart opens and you feel better. You feel better in your life. You feel better about your partner. You feel good because your heart is opening to receive. It's, you're not closed and myopic, and especially whatever we focus on, we're going to feel more of. So if we're feeling thankful and grateful, and noticing the small things and feeling that little pitter-patter of our heart, we're going to feel good. if we're going, oh, why didn't they do this and why didn't they do that and this is wrong and blah, 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 guess what's going to happen? Our heart closes and we feel like crap. So the more you can appreciate, the more you can focus your attention on what is right and what is good, the better you're going to feel and the better your relationship's going to be and the happier you're both going to be because you're going to feel appreciated. You're going to feel noticed. You're going to feel valued. And that's what we all want. We all want to feel loved, valued, known, and accepted. And when we have that, we need less and less from the outside. Then everything else is a supplement, but it's not filling that hole.
Well, you know, again, I think what happens when people reveal parts of themselves to their partner is that sometimes they actually feel rejected or criticized or maybe controlled. And it's interesting how people will sometimes be more apt to share things with total strangers than because I think most people really do want to be seen and known, but there's just so much fear about one's partner using it against you in some fashion. You see that in your practice?
I see that a lot. I think that's really true, Veronica. And it's really sad. And that is only going to lead to more distance. And it's going to only... That is the stuff that affairs are made out of. That's why
yes.
we turn to others. That's why we cheat and not just chat. Because when someone looks at us with acceptance, when we don't feel judged, when we feel like, I am known and I'm seen and I'm appreciated, on whatever level it is, that feels right and that feels good. And then if we go home and what we're feeling is negativity or that sense of I'm not safe and I'm not safe to be me and I'm not safe to open up, and if I do, it's going to be used against me.
Yeah.
There's not a lot left there. You know, there that however, when you start feeding it, one of you has to do it, but truthfully, ultimately both have to do it. One person cannot make a relationship. A relationship takes two people. So if your partnership is on that kind of negative edge, then it might be important to seek some counseling, whether it be, you know, with clergy, with a therapist, with a coach. But sometimes it's better to take it out of your hands and just allow yourself to be taken care of and guided by someone who is a professional.
And I think, too, that, you know, you have to reach that point where you realize that if you make this compromise and you don't show up as yourself in your relationship, then really you're shortchanging yourself. You don't really get the opportunity to be loved, to be really fully loved as who you truly are. Would you agree with that?
I do, but I think we also bring to relationship the relationships of our past, the unhealed relationships. So sometimes what begins to happen is we just replicate what we know. And so if that's what we expect in relationship, that's what we're going to create in relationship. And I think the way to stretch out of our unhealed places, because sometimes it's not just our partner, it's what we're bringing into it as well. And in some ways, if we expect to be rejected or we expect to be hurt or we expect to be judged, because that's what our parents did to us, we're going to find that, and we're going to create that, and we're going to be hypersensitive to it. And we may overlook the good stuff and just feel and sense and see every time what we expect is reinforced.
Well, so what are some of the ways? Do you work with couples or do you work with individuals?
Both.
With both. What do you do when couples come to see you? as a couple, when they're both in the same room and they're having, you know, a heated conflict of some sort, do you give each of them a chance to be heard? Or do you do role plays? Or what are some of the techniques that you use?
Well, for one thing, it's teaching people how to lovingly listen, because so few of us really listen. We, you know, we hear enough to prepare our defense, so we say, oh, yeah. And unfortunately, many couples, especially couples, by the time you want to pay for therapy or pay for coaching, you're in trouble. You're already in power struggles. You're not listening. You're not respecting, and you're not feeling loved. Things are feeling pretty desperate. So it's slowing down enough and even teaching basic skills, like basic communication skills. Because if we look at communication, what is communication? Most simply, it's the message sent is the message received. So even in the most simplest of forms, you have to start making sure that the message sent is the message received. And I'm presuming for your listeners, you know, we want to give them things they can apply at home. It's not about coming to see me. It's about teaching people how to do this at home.
Absolutely. So what if somebody is listening and they are just terrified about confessing something to them? And by the way, it sounded like you were suggesting that it's very important to come clean if you are cheating. So what if somebody out there is thinking, I've had an affair or I've had an emotional affair and I want to talk about it with my partner? How would you recommend that they approach that?
Hey, the first thing is, you know, is this safe to do? You know, is your partner not a rageaholic? And, you know, what is the situation at home? But let's say, you know, your relationship is relatively normal. Maybe there's a vacuum in there and you're not emotionally connecting and you were lonely and you didn't mean it and it just kind of grew, because that's what happens. We know very few people who cheat expect to cheat. They start very innocently. It just starts as a conversation, and then you start realizing, oh, I have something in common and this feels good, and wow, you know, I enjoy talking to this person, and that person enjoys talking to me, and then you look forward to talking to that person, and things just grow. And it's not that, oh, I'm looking to cheat, because emotional sex can have many different outlets. It can be just emotional. It can be a cyber affair. It could be a physical affair. But when emotional sex takes over, you almost can't help it, because your brain chemistry kicks in, and dopamine starts raging through your body, which is that feel good. And so when you're connecting, you get the dopamine surges, and then when you're not connecting, you get the lack of dopamine, which creates a plunge. And then, especially for women, we have oxytocin. So we start liking the person, and the oxytocin naturally makes us bond to that person. So we're getting the surges and the bonding. And there's just a whole cavalry of brain chemistry that suddenly hooks us to the situation and to other people. So you could be a really good, kind person who would never think you cheat, would cheat, and you can find yourself in that situation. So let's say you do, you've heard this conversation, and you decide, you know, I've got to end it, and I really want to go home and build my relationship and not do this anymore. How do you tell your partner? Well, the first thing is you have to own the truth completely yourself. And you also have to be absolutely sensitive that if your partner truly doesn't have an idea, this is going to be like a 2-ton piano falling out of the sky. Mm. So it's important to be empathetic. And the best way to approach it is using something I call the Oreo cookie, which is, and I believe this for any conversation you want to have that is a serious conversation or even a criticism, I always recommend the Oreo cookie, which is chocolate, because I love chocolate. So the chocolate is the sweet part. It's always the love, then the filling, and then you always have the chocolate or the love on the other end. So a confession, let's say for an emotional affair, might sound like this. Sweetheart, there's something I want to talk to you about. And the reason I'm bringing this up or want to talk to you about it is because I love you and I love us. And I think there's been a lot of emotional separation lately. And I really screwed up. And I just want to talk to you about it and get it all out in the open so that we can work through this and work on us. And then you tell what happened. But you don't give every little detail. It's not necessary. Ultimately, your partner's going to ask for every detail in time. But when you're presenting it, you just present some of the information. I was talking on Facebook with someone, and we exchanged phone numbers, and we've been having a daily call every day, and I started having feelings for this person, and I realized this is dangerous, and so I knew I should come home. I wanted to tell you, and I plan to stop it, and I won't have any contact with this person, but I felt it important to share this with you. And I love you, and I want us to work on our relationship, and I want us to be really strong. And I want it to be like it used to be when we first met and fell in love. We've just created too much distance, and I want to heal that, and I am so sorry.
Well, that's a lot for a partner to absorb, huh?
Well, but if you heard it, it was love, the stuff,
oh, yeah.
And love.
Absolutely.
And it was all about your intention. I want us to heal. I love you. I want us to heal. I'm sorry. Now, that's just stage one, you know, because when your partner comes out of shock from this conversation, they're going to feel betrayed. They're going to feel absolutely rightfully upset. They're going to want to know all the details. They're going to want to know, is there more? There's going to be some distrust. It's a huge Pandora's box. You're open.
It absolutely is. Yeah.
However, if you do it and you're coming forth in integrity, and once your partner calms down and begins to recognize that you came forth because you want to heal the relationship and you've caught yourself and you step forth in integrity, it's a lot stronger than getting busted.
Well, speaking of that, let's look at the other side of this, which is, how would you confront a cheating partner?
Well, I think evidence is essence. Like, a lot of times you get an emotional hit or you have one little piece of information and you go, that bastard. I hope you could say that on radio. But,
yeah, absolutely. You can say it on our radio show.
Okay. So you go, that bastard, you know, or whatever the equivalent for a woman and a man is. But, you know, it's like your natural reaction is to then communicate, to confront them. And I'm suggesting do not confront until you have evidence, because a lot of evidence. So take the time to gather the evidence, because evidence is essential. Proof is your ally. Proof, you must have proof before you proceed. Plus, the more you do know, the easier it will be to get to the illumination, which is what you want. You want the truth so you guys can move beyond this. So there's different things you can do to begin to gather the truth. But the most important thing is you need to take care of yourself through the process. You cannot just let yourself be controlled by your anger or rage. You really have to be calm, cool, and collected, both when you confront your partner, but also in the proof-gathering stage, because this will eat you alive. So as you gather the evidence, you have to spend even more time taking really good care of yourself through the process. And that might mean meditating. It's keep getting breathing and getting stabilized, because as you begin to uncover the truth, it's so painful, and it's going to wipe you out completely unless you're taking care of yourself through the process. So the first thing is to gather the evidence. You know, you look through their cell phone when they're not home and see, you know, what texts have been written. You look for pictures. You look for receipts and look at the calendar and see, you know, where they said, oh, I was out at a business dinner, and then you find a receipt for dinner for two. There's something off there. You're finding clothes, you know, you go look in their car and you look for receipts or stuff between the car seats, and you look in the glove compartment and you check out the trunk. And you have to be sneaky about it. You really do. You know, you cannot be caught, and you better have a good excuse if you are, like why you're doing this, until you have your proof. You know, there is Google, so you can go to Google and look for a private detective if you're really suspicious and have the funds. And there's certainly, you know, things depending on how suspicious you really are. But once you have the proof, then you can confront your partner. And whether it be text, whether it be pictures, whether it be receipts, whether it be phone numbers, you know, whatever it is, when you confront your partner, you still do it calmly, not hysterically. And it's important not to be combative, because if you're combative, all you're going to get is defense. You're not going to get the truth. And it's really natural to expect that your partner is going to automatically deny and defend or try to turn or distract. You know?
Absolutely. If I can interrupt, I just want to ask for some clarification here. What are the most common infidelity warning signs?
Some of them we spoke of earlier. You know, one, you're really going to feel
that you're washing up, you know, showering before you come home.
Or the minute they get home, you know, they go straight to the shower. They're on the internet a lot. But it's sneaky, like the passwords are starting to change. They're getting very, where things used to be kind of open, now it's very exclusive. When you ask, well, what you do today, you can feel it's an excuse, or they turn it around and go, why are you even asking? Why do you care? You know, there's a lot of defensiveness, that there's a change. Now, there's a change in how they are with the family. Maybe they used to be involved, and now they're not. They're spending more and more time on the internet. They're not really making plans for the future. They're rather evasive. They're working longer and away. There's suddenly more business trips where there wasn't business trips before. You know, it's like there's change in behavior that is away from you, not towards you. You're feeling the distancing going on. And there's a lot of secretiveness. As I mentioned, they're changing the passwords so you don't have access where you used to have access. When you walk in, they're closing down their computer, or they are taking their computer to another room. Or when calls come in, they go into the other room where they used to talk in front of you. And they might say, oh, it's because I don't want to bother you with this business call. But, you know, that's suspicious if it's happening over and over again. Texts coming in at all hours of the evening, and they say, oh, it's work. I don't think so. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe once or twice, but if there's regular texting going on.
So let's say that your relationship has the signs, mm-hmm. you've looked for the evidence, and now you want to approach your partner and confront them about the cheating, and you've advised us to, you know, be calm and collected. But I mean, is there a particular time that's better, or you know, should it be in a public place or at home?
Well, I think it's good to have. I call it the four P's: a proof, preparation, plan, and purpose. So the proof, as we talked about, you need proof to punch through any denial. You need to prepare. You have to decide on, if they are trying to dismiss it, or if they say, no sex is involved, or it's just a friendship, or you're crazy, that you're prepared for that. And also that you are emotionally ready and that you practice being calm. The plan is, you have a plan of where you're going to do this. So you obviously don't want to be disturbed. You want a place where, if you do have kids, that they're at a babysitter, or you are in a room where you're not, or they're already asleep, so that you have a plan where you're not going to be disturbed, and you choose the time and place really carefully. And know what the purpose is. The purpose is to get to the truth. So listen carefully to your partner's answers each time so you can assess the... It's almost like a business meeting. You have to assess what the response is so that you can get to the truth. Now, there are certain things that I always recommend, like limit the questions and don't attack. Because if you attack, you're not going to get anything. You're just going to get defense. So make it like a conversation. Be very conversational. Be interested.
You wouldn't advise saying, "I know you did. Look, I have this evidence."
Yes, but be cool, composed, and collected, and make it conversational. Because the minute you start attacking, they're just going to go into denial. So the Oreo cookie we talked about before,
yes.
I also say use for the confrontation. So, something, I love you. You start, even though you want to kick them, you want to kill them at the moment. No, you start with love. So I love you. I'm devastated. I need to talk to you about this. I want to hear the truth. And I really want to understand and work this out. And then you start with some of the evidence. You don't give all your evidence because they may deny. In fact, they probably will deny. And then you have the second part of the evidence. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, what about this? If you lay all the evidence all at once, they can kind of get around it. So you present some of the evidence. I've come across this text from Linda, and what is she saying? I love you, and I only want to
talk
to you. What is that? I'm really devastated by this, and I want to talk about this and get to the bottom of it. And if you are having an affair, I'd like to know so that we can heal our way through this. Like, you do not lead them to think that, oh, this is going to lead to devastation and I'm going to take all your money and divorce you and never talk to you again. First get to the truth, and then you can decide what you want to do.
Right. Well, speaking of that, okay, so let's say you've done your, first you've seen the sign,
mm-hmm.
you've gotten the proof, you've confronted. Now, you teach something called love CPR. So presuming that after you've confronted your partner, you want to try to put things back together, what is love CPR?
Well, I really believe that one can heal after infidelity and make your relationship even stronger. Because the work of healing through infidelity is about building trust. It is about forgiveness, and it's about radical honesty. And it's about creating a basis of communication and love that makes the relationship so strong that it almost affair-proofs your relationship. So the CPR, the cardiopulmonary resuscitation, literally, is bringing breath and love back to your relationship. And it is first healing through the betrayal. And there's two things that have to happen. And that is, one, two partners have to be involved. One can't do it. And the person who is having the affair has to end the affair. There's no ands, ifs, or buts. There's no excuses. There's no, we'll just be platonic friends now. No, they have to end the affair. And the person who's been betrayed has to do some of their own self-nurturance so that they can get to a place of forgiveness and be willing to forgive. So there's some self-work that has to do. But when you get to the repair work between the two of you, it's really about building better communication, applying the three A's, and holding hands as a team and becoming friends. Becoming friends and learning how to do partnership. Because often we assume we know that we get married or we commit to a long-term relationship, and that then partnership naturally happens. But partnership, like faithfulness, is a learned skill. And you have to learn how to be partners and how to be loving partners and how to be a best friend to your partner. And that's what the CPR really is, learning how to be best friends and partners so that you feel like you're on the same team, on the same bench. And when issues arise, you're dealing with them from the same bench.
Mm. Now, you say that the obviously the affair needs to end, but what if the person who's had the affair wants to go back to being platonic friends with the person they had an affair with?
Well, a lot of times that's a cover-up, and you know, well-intended, because the basis of a lot of affairs that aren't just one-night stands is they have become friends, and you feel very close. But for a primary relationship to work, the affair must end. Can a relationship turn into a platonic friendship? I think if there's been sex, it's really hard. Because part of an affair turning into a platonic friendship is that everything is out in the open, which means that your partner is involved and your partner approves. And truthfully, I don't know many partners who are going to approve of your continuing on
Right. Even if it's a polyamorous arrangement, you know, something, or an open marriage, that betrayal and the fact that that person was willing to engage in something that was dishonest, that's very hard to get past. And I'm not sure it should be gotten past.
Deception is, you know, when you have an open relationship or it's polyamorous, there is, as the one thing about a lot of polyamorous relationships is they do have a lot of open communication. It's not the whole reason it's an open relationship is they're open. If they're not open, then that's not really an open relationship. It's important for any relationship, whether monogamous or polyamorous, to have a really clear cut understanding between partners of what is cheating and what's not. And often we say, well, cheating is having sex with someone that I don't approve of. We're having sex with anyone but me. If it's monogamy, it's having sex with anyone but me. And really, when does cheating start? Does it start when your partner starts flirting with someone? Does it start if they start texting or sexting with someone?
Right.
Does it start with being online and masturbating? You know, what is cheating? Because I think, especially now with all the options and availability, it's important for couples to sit down and define that. Because without that definition, one person may think is cheating, the other person may not. So if that's clearly defined, then you're both on the same plate, if you will, in terms of, I'm cheating or I'm not cheating now.
Well, yes, and that is the key, right, is to make sure that both parties are on the same page and have the same expectations.
I said plate, that's funny.
So, for people who haven't crossed that line, and haven't had the emotional affair, how would you recommend that they affair-proof their relationship?
Well, the good news is if you don't have to deal with coming back from betrayal, you are so ahead of the game. Because it's really then about feeding and nourishing your relationship to make it even stronger and more passionate, affectionate, and fun. Because complacency over time sets in. We know we love our partner, but we're not feeling it anymore. And so it's keeping the fire strong, and it's communicating and knowing what your vision is and speaking to each other in each other's love language. Gary Chapman wrote a book many years ago, and it's still like on the top 100 list, and it's like an older book now, about the five love languages. And we each have our own love languages. And so it's understanding what your partner's love language is and speaking to them in that. For example, my partner is a word guy. So it feels really good because he's constantly texting me and telling me how much he loves me and sending me emails every morning about his love for me and leaving love notes. And it feels really, really good. For me, though, my love language is action. So it's not just words. It's all the action that goes with the words that makes me feel loved and safe. For others, it could be doing things together. It's doing activities or having mutual hobbies that you both enjoy together. We each have our different language for love, and it's really important that you speak in your partner's love language. So if you don't know it, I think it's important to find out, is it through physical touch? Is it through thoughtful little gifts? Is it through spending time together? Is it by showing love through action? Or is it through words? And it might be some combination of all of the above, but one is usually the major language that speaks to us most strongly. So it's knowing your partner's love language.
And I guess if two partners, they may have different love language, so then there's a certain amount of stretching in each other's direction. So if your partner likes to talk and you like to do things, you probably have to find some combination of the two.
Right, right. Because understand that this is the way I'm loving my partner, by listening. By sitting here, even though words are not my thing, I'm going to increase the amount of words that I say to my partner because I know that's how they feel loved. And if it's going to Home Depot with me because it's spending time with me and doing stuff with me, I will do it because I know that's important to you and I want you to know how I cherish and love you.
Yeah.
So I will speak in your language.
It seems appreciations are pretty key for most people. That certainly that was the research that came out of the Gottman Institute. Mm-hmm. And they put people into the love labs and noted that the relationships that had the best prognosis had more appreciations than criticisms.
And more five positives to every negative.
Yeah,
was the breakdown that for a relationship to survive, you need everyone. And a negative is a criticism or a put-down or, you know, an act of emotional distance. And positive is love and attention and appreciation and valuing your partner. So for every negative, you need five positives to keep it running well. And we also need a lot more affection because with the whole internet age, we're phoning it in and we're texting and but we're not touching. And often, especially guys, for guys, affection is sex. And for women, often we need to start from the head and move on down. For guys, it's starting from the bottom and moving on up. If you start with sex, it opens their heart. For women, you have to start with the brain and move on the head and move on down. It's about wooing and romancing and making them feel loved and valued. And like it's more than just sex. That's what makes most women melt. And affection.
Oh, Yeah. Parts. That was, Meredith Shivers, a Canadian researcher, just came out with some results. I think it was last year. It was all over the Oprah show. Women, number one fantasy of, you know, of being kind of swept off their feet.
wait, but swept off their feet in what way?
Oh, well, that was the rub, see, because it was different for every woman. She wanted the man to know exactly when and how she wanted to be swept off her feet and didn't want to have to give instructions for it. Uh-huh. So it might be a stranger or it might be her husband, but he should read her mind.
That's what men's major complaint is.
You know, I know.
There's a picture of guys and women. So the guy's picture is there's two buttons on off. You know, in terms of the controls for men and for women, there's buttons and knobs and ons and offs, and it's very complicated for these poor guys.
Well, hopefully we can help people learn how to communicate with each other a little bit better. We are, believe it or not, out of time, so I want to make sure that we let our listeners know how they can contact you and how they can get a copy of your brand new book, Chatting or Cheating.
Yes, it's on sale on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. The Kindle is now up, and the Nook is now up as well. And there's also a real book. I'm a reader, so I love holding a book in my hand, so it can also be ordered. And as I said earlier, there's a free chapter all about emotional sex on my site. So if they go to www.chattingorcheating.com, there's also videos in the media room to watch about how to confess, how to confront, lots and lots of good things, how to affair-proof your relationship so they can continue to learn, and there's lots of fun things to do on the site.
It's excellent. You've got a blog, too, so it's great.
Oh,
like
great.
Once again, chattingorcheating.com. And our guest tonight has been Dr. Sherry Myers, author of Chatting or Cheating. Sherry, thanks so much for joining me in the Shame-Free Zone. I really appreciate it.
What a pleasure. Thank you so much. And have a great evening.
Oh, the best of, I hope your book becomes a bestseller. I'm sure you're well on your way. You've got some great accolades there from lots of well-known people, including Barbara DeAngelis. And to our listeners, next week, I'm going to be interviewing another author. His name is Jeffrey Michelson, and he's author of Laura Meets Jeffrey. So that should be also an interesting read. It's kind of more of a true story account of a time when sex was a little freer than it is now. And might be a little, some of the stories are going to be a little reminiscent of Shades of Grey, if you're familiar with that best-selling book that's out right now. So join me next Monday at 9 p.m. Pacific here in the Shame-Free Zone. Good night for now.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with you. Sering kesepian, kenapa tak menutup kabar berita?